What's going on, family? Welcome to another episode of Called to Serve Podcast. I am your host, Reggie Hubbard. If you haven't already, please go like, comment, subscribe, share, all that jazz. It really helps with our mission of serving those who serve others. You can listen to us on your favorite platform where you like to listen to your podcasts. Also, some very exciting news. Called to Serve Podcast and Reefs Across America have formed a partnership, and we will be airing on their network Sunday mornings at 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. So you can find Reefs of America Radio on iHeartRadio app, the Odyssey app, and the TuneIn app by searching the word Reef. With us today, we have a very special guest. My man served in the Army for 10 years, the infantryman, sniper, basketball player, minor league coach. I mean, my man wears so many different hats, just a man of service. It's clear that he has a heart to serve others. Now, without further ado, I want to introduce my guy, Tim Simpson. What's going on, Tim?
Yo, hey, what's going on? Hey, man, the way you brought me out there, man, I almost felt like I need to go suit back up and put my uniform back on.
Hey, man. Hey, bro, you put in the work, man. this is all about you know, telling your story and really just honoring your service, man. Like, you have experience that most people probably will never have or can ever imagine. So, you know, thank you so much for taking the time. I forgot to mention, my man is also a podcaster, so we'll be talking about that a little bit too, for sure.
We can find
out where to go listen to him as he drops Appreciate those nuggets. But Tim, just give us a brief background about you and your story. You know, what led you to become the man that you are today?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me on here. I just discovered your podcast, but I've been binge watching it like crazy. You do phenomenal work, and I want to thank you for highlighting people, not just people that serve in the military, but people that do all kinds of service. Like, saw some of your episodes of doing, you know, people dealing with PTSD, dealing with grief and stuff like that. That's phenomenal. So I want to give you your flowers as well.
Thank you, brother.
So thank you so very much for what you do. Now, for me, whew, okay. My journey kind of began with my father. My father served in the Marines. He served during Vietnam. And we've had several family members that served throughout the military. I've always been drawn to it. And so, right before I joined the military, I'd actually said I was wanting to join the military, but I was going to join out of high school. But because of my grandmother, my father's mother, I didn't, because she made me promise her while she was alive that I wouldn't join. And because I loved and respect that woman so much, and her teachings still are with me throughout, I didn't. And so I, you know, went to high school, you know, graduated high school, went on to college, played 2 years in the Osho Community College in Chanute, Kansas. We won a couple championships there. Playing basketball. And then I went on to McPherson College, played ball there, and kind of was just kind of not knowing what I wanted to do. And then unfortunately in 2004, my grandmother passed away. She passed away in February of 2004. And about that time is when I was going through some issues, with my then wife. And I was like, you know what, this is the perfect time. Which put me at a different level than most people, because I joined at 26 years old. So I was a little bit more, I guess you can say, seasoned. Mm. Yeah, I guess that's the best way to say it without saying calling myself old. But it was, I think it was a blessing in disguise, because had I joined as early as I wanted to, I don't know if I'd be sitting here talking to you right now. Because I think I would have went in with a different type of mindset, which could have probably gotten myself and others unalived. And so I'm very thankful that I had that opportunity to mature. And then I got thrust into a leadership position early on. And I think that really kind of helped out with some things.
Wow. Wow, man. Thanks for sharing that. So, I mean, so you went into the military. You were 26 years old. And like I said, I kind of see the benefit in that too, 100%. You know, I went in when I was 17. And
oh, wow.
I was still a kid. You know, and a lot of times you can have a youthful ignorance, and you can have a youthful arrogance when you're that young and you wear a uniform, because with that it just comes a lot of different things, man. The travel, you know, you get caught up in so many things. You can get caught up in women. Man. You can get just, I mean, if you are not careful, you can easily get in trouble. So I think,
you saying that, just, I mean, come on, man, you just open up all kinds of just memories. I've been trying to suppress for the longest, but no, you're right. I mean, that youthful arrogance, just, that's why I'm very thankful. You know, I feel very blessed, fortunate. Even though, during my military career, especially being deployed, lost a lot of good men and women, people I consider brothers and sisters, and not just because we served together, but like on a real, on a real family level, because we became that close. And so I 100% agree with you that, you know, it's amazing how joined at age 17, and then, you know, for me, joined at age 26, and I remember how I was at age 17. There's no way I would have survived. And that's crazy to think. Like, it's just really crazy to think, but yeah.
Yeah, you know, I just I see the value in it. I see the value in waiting. I see the value in, you know, coming a little bit further into manhood, because when I was 26, I was completely different than when I was 17, naturally, right? A lot of that, you know, run and gun mentality. It's all fun and games until it's time to get to business. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, it's all fun and games until it's your turn.
Yeah. You come in and you think at that age, you're thinking like, oh yeah, it's just like a movie. You know, I mean, go in there, I jump over, slide across a bar table, and you know, I'm, you know, popping off shots and this and that, or, you know, I'm scaling off the side of a building, and, you know, I'm jumping into a crowd of the enemy, and I'm taking everybody. Yeah, it's nothing like that. Yeah.
You always got that one.
I do have a funny story. Yeah, I do have a funny story about what something that happened to me when I was in Afghanistan. We'll get to that.
All right. Hey, we're gonna have to talk about that, man. You know, I mean, we could talk. You want to talk about it now? Let's talk about it now.
Oh, okay, fine. Well, because going along with the whole movie thing, I love movies. I'm a huge movie. I love movies, all kind of movies. Doesn't matter what the genre. It doesn't matter. I love movies. It's just a lot of fun. But, you know, I remember watching, I can't remember the movie I remember watching, but I remember watching, I think it was Delta Force with Chuck Norris. Okay. And there was a part, I think it was in the second or third one, where he's on the Chinook, and they dropped the door down, and he's on the motorcycle, and he just revs it up, and he just takes off the motorcycle, you know, parachutes in, and the next thing you know, he's just gone. Now, I didn't have a motorcycle on our Chinook. No, that didn't happen. However, I'm thinking, yeah. They didn't give us motorcycles or anything like that. But I'm thinking, okay, you know, we're hovering over in our Chinook. I'm going to tell you right now, for people that don't know, pilots, like especially Chinook pilots, are some of the most talented and gifted pilots that you'll ever meet in your life. Where they can place us in different spots is just something I've never seen before in my life. And in this particular one, they're placing us kind of like on a roof, and he drops the door down. And I mean, it's perfectly, I thought it was only like 10 feet. Let's just say at that point in time, I probably should have been wearing glasses, because 10 feet turned into actually 20. And so I misjudged it. And so I'm like, yeah, let's go. So I'm gung-ho jumping out of the back of the Chinook. And then I jump, I realize I'm a lot higher than I thought I was. And let's just say I try to catch myself. It's like, you know, the cartoons when they're on the cliff and they turn around and that little split second. Yeah, oh, yeah, that's what it felt like. But it was much faster. And I completely fell out of the Chinook, hit the roof, and then went through the roof.
Oh, yeah, man.
Okay. Yeah, so that was my, you know what, this is not the movies. Let's do this a little bit. Let's be a little smarter about this.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's definitely a wise idea. Did you go through any more roofs?
No, I did not. After that, I was like, okay, where's my rope? We were rappelling down. I'm not, you know, jumping anymore. Back, knees, none of that can take that anymore.
Oh, nah, bro. Nah. Especially you got all that kid on, man. Ooh.
Ooh.
Come on, man.
It'll age you real quick. It'll age you real quick.
100%. People will be
now, like, I didn't ask you, what was your MOS?
So I was also infantry and military police.
Ooh, okay. 31 okay.
Thing, man. All right. You know what I mean?
Yes, so, yes. Hey, okay.
Like you said, bro, I thought I was going to be taking it a little bit more easier, but listen. it did. Okay, so thanks for telling that story. So I know in your bio, man, and I have some questions for you. I know it mentioned, yes, you know, four trips across the pond. What was the most challenging part of those deployments, physically or mentally?
Okay, I guess the best way to say that is the first ever deployment I had, of course, was to Iraq. For me, it was the mental part. And the reason why I was mentally, physically, I was fit. I was, you know, fresh out of college, was a career athlete, especially in basketball. I also ran distance and track. So I had a lot of endurance and all that. So the physical part, I was great. And for my age, maxing out PTs, all that good. So physically, I'm great. The mental part came because that's one thing I forgot to mention was that at that time, I just had my first child. And she was a preemie. She was 3 months early. She was 1 pound, 3.5 ounces when she was born. And they did not realize, they didn't know if she was going to make it 48 hours.
Wow.
And so by the time I joined, she was just about to turn 2. Leaving her was probably the biggest obstacle I had to overcome. Yeah. Because I didn't know what was going to happen. I knew I was infantry. I knew we were going to be, you know, put in some situations. I didn't know what was going to happen. I didn't know if I was ever going to make it back to see my daughter. And so that was probably the toughest part. Physically, you know, the training, I believed and I trusted in the training that we did. I believed and trusted in the work I put in. So a lot of the stuff that, you know, we got in situations, it was muscle memory. It was just, I did it without thinking. But then the problem was when I had like a split, you know, maybe a 2 to 3 second pause where I could, my mind settled, and then I would think about my daughter, and it was trying to get back in that mode of what needed to be done to get the job done, where I struggled, in that first part. And then of course later, you know, in other deployments, I started to get older. So the physical part became more of a challenge. And I had to make sure I prepared myself. You know, I'll be honest with you. I have more of a big, I found a lot of respect for LeBron James. Him being 40, doing what he's doing at the level he's doing, and still dominating the way he does. And it's the work that he puts in the off season, that he puts in during the season. And that's what, you know, before I even knew what all that stuff was going on, that's what I knew I had to do, because I had soldiers I had to lead. I had to be that person for them, you know, that helped them make it over there, make it back to their families. That was my main goal, my main mission. Go over there, do the job, make sure my people get back to their families. And so, like I said, early on, it was mental. Later on, it became physical.
Thanks for sharing that, man. You know, I think a lot of the times, I think, just in my personal experience also, I think mostly it's mental. You know, mind over matter. If it ain't on your mind, it don't matter.
Right.
You get what I'm saying? And that's the thing. I met with another veteran. I had another veteran on a podcast on a previous episode, and he said something that just really stuck out to me. You know, he's just saying, like, whether you served for 2 years or 20 years, 10 years, he was like, that's 2 years of your life that you pretty much put your life on hold, and the rest of the world had to live without you.
Yeah.
And I just thought that was a powerful statement, because it's true. The world goes on without us, man. When we're doing our thing and they don't hear from us, man, like I said, mind over matter. And I'm not saying that our family, people who care about us, forget about us, but I think it's easier to live life without us.
Well, when you think about it, especially putting in that perspective, think about, there's only what, 1 to 2% of the population actually serves.
Yeah,
ever,
like,
serves
1%, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, like, yeah. So you're in the top 1%, or bottom 1%, however you want to look at it, that serve. In my opinion, top 1% that serve. So you're talking about the rest, you know, 99% of the rest of the United States that probably are not really thinking about you being over there, because you're not part of their, even though you're a big part of their life, because what we do and what, you know, our brothers and sisters are continually doing now provides that security for us to do the things that we do now. But like you said, we're not the first things on their mind. Now, our families, yes, that's 100%. But when it comes to everybody else, no. I mean, we're really not on their minds. And I think that's, to me, it's crazy, but I actually understand it, because when I wasn't, before I served, I wasn't thinking about the men and women that were going overseas.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, and it wasn't until after I served, I was like, man, this is difficult. You know, I don't care what your MOS is. Yeah, we can talk about being 11 bang bangs. You know what I'm saying? We can talk about all you want to, but the 42 Alphas, you know what I'm saying? 11 Charlies, you know, the 92 Golfs, yeah. Everybody. For those people, the 42 Alpha, that's human resources, those office people, the 92 Golfs, that's cooks. But for those people, it's the same thing. They may not be getting, you know, shot at and having IDs going off around them, you know, like we may have experienced. I know, Lord knows, I've experienced. I've gotten way too many TBIs from different IDs, but that's half the reason why I end up getting medically retired, because of I had one too many of those, and then I really got messed up over there, and it's like, man, this is difficult. You know, they're all away, all of us over there, away from our families.
Yeah,
you know, the Army, the Marines, the Air Force, the Navy, and it's like the National Guard. Like, I have found so much more respect from the men and women that serve. But I've also, because of that, have found so much more respect for the men and women that serve here, as far as first responders, because it's the same thing for them. Every time they walk out that door. Every time they clock in, every time they go on duty, whether you're a police officer, firefighter, EMT, you know what I'm saying? Whether you're a doctor or nurse, every time you step out, there's you're stepping into a job, a profession where there's no guarantees, there's no certainties. And I have so much respect for anybody that puts themselves in that situation.
That's real, man. That's real, man. And I definitely appreciate that sentiment, because I think a lot of times us as military personnel, we can look down on people who serve locally. You know, I served both. I'm 12 years law enforcement as police. And I see how that can happen. I see how we can get our chest big and things like that. And
It's a
collaborative effort, man. Like, we all took an oath, you know, to protect our nation, our families against all enemies, foreign and domestic. 100%.
Yeah.
That's it, man. You know, so we're on the same team.
Yeah.
100%. Now, I know we talked a little bit about Sniper. what's that? Do you want to talk about that, or can you talk about that? Because obviously, one, everybody don't know the requirements that you gotta go to become a sniper, man. First of all, you gotta be physically fit, and you gotta be an expert marketer. Mm-hmm. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? 100%. And you gotta get the recommendation.
Right? Yes.
Right. All the stuff you gotta go through, the psych exam, come on. Like,
listen, I'm gonna tell you. There's two things that stick out to me when it came to sniper training, sniper school, and all that stuff. The two things to me that was the toughest, like I said, at that time, and this is early on in my career, when I was able to go through all this stuff, I was physically, I was okay. Now, they do a very, very good job of making sure you're physically exhausted. The only thing I would kind of would compare that to that would be even worse than that would be going through, like Ranger school, Navy SEALs, SEERS training, so like I said, like to me, like going through sniper school, it as hard as it is like an introductory level to some of the other, you know, things you can actually do as far as being part of special forces. This is what all of this is all incorporated into special forces. Mm-hmm. But to me, the biggest things were the most toughest was like the psyche eval. And then for me, you know, thinking I can get away from some stuff I hated school. I hated school. Yeah. I hated. I was good. Now don't get it twisted. I had a 3.8 grade average. So it's not like I'm dumb or anything. But I don't like it. I just didn't like it. And so I'm thinking I'm not gonna have to use math or anything like that again. And then I get to cyber school and like even with like going to the range and stuff. It wasn't the fact that I was using math. It was that I was eye testing everything. So I might take one shot and I see, okay. All right. It hit right about there. Okay. So I know I just got to adjust just about right there. And I hit the target. I wasn't using math at all, man. When I tell you that I had to carry around a little notebook that I had all these formulas I had to write. Okay. So if I'm in this position, okay, I need to have, you know, and I'm taking into account the winnage. I'm taking into account that, yeah, okay.
Gotta have that dope, they bro. Gotta have that dope.
Bro, man, tell you, my head hurt after the first two or three days of them telling me, okay, you need to. And then when they taught me actually how to fire out of a quarter size hole to be able to hit a target from 450 yards out. And I'm thinking, first of all, I'm not Hawkeye from the Avengers. I don't know who in the world you think I am. Like, I can hit somebody. Dude, give me an open window. Like, no, bro, you got to be able to do all this. And it's the fact that they teach you all this stuff. It's just, like I said, the mental part. Now, that, to me, the mental part was by far the toughest to actually deal with when it came to that because of everything that you have to do. And then being patient. That was tough for me, being patient, because sometimes you'd have to, in order to get to the perfect spot, to get the perfect shot, you might have to crawl 4 or 5 hours. You know what I'm saying? To where you're not moving the grass. You're not, you know, changing the scenery where you're not, you know, and it's like, man, I can't just run up on them. Like, bro, this is not infantry. No. We don't just go in kicking doors. We are silent. We're silent. And most time people don't even know we were ever there.
Yep.
And so, yeah, that to me, the biggest part was by far the mental aspect of it. And then teaching myself and making myself learn how to be patient, which I love it so much because everything I've learned in the military has carried me on for the rest of my life. It's helped me when it came to, when it's come to coaching, talking with my players, because I started coaching youth basketball and I've gone from there, and it's helped me so much every step of the way of my life, to where not only am I trying to teach basketball, but I'm also coaching these guys on life, telling them, hey, look, you gotta learn how to be patient. You gotta learn that not everything is going to go your way. You can have a plan, great, but do you have a contingency plan? And you have a contingency plan for that plan if that plan failed.
Yeah.
You can't just stop. Life doesn't stop just because things don't work out for you. You got to learn how to look at what's in front of you. If it doesn't work out that way, learn how to pivot, learn how to move forward and keep pushing forward, because you got people to count on you.
That's real, man. That's 100% real. And I want to go back real quick just to clarify for our listeners. DOPE stands for data on previous engagements. We weren't talking about any type of narcotics. Just want to throw that out there. When people be like, oh, well, Reggie was talking about you got to have DOPE. Data on previous engagements, my friends. Okay. Now,
I was with you.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes I forget, man. It's like, all right, shoot. We're having a conversation, but, you know, other people are going to hear this conversation. So,
yeah.
You know, ain't nobody coming 100%. At me.
I got you.
So there's no doubt that they're, you know, and maybe not for you, but I know for myself personally, I've had moments where I wanted to quit, man, and just give it up. Mm. And, you know, and maybe you have too. And if you have, what do you think helped you the most in those moments where quitting felt like an option or the only option?
In order for me to answer that question, I will have to talk about one of the most difficult moments in my military career. We're over in Iraq, and I was probably about, well, after that deployment, I would have been able to ETS out if I wanted to. And it was tough because I just gotten thrust into a squad leader / platoon sergeant role. I was only a specialist.
Oh.
But because of my age and because of how I was leading at the time, my lieutenant, my first sergeant, and even my sergeant major were very comfortable and put me in that role. We were just north of Baghdad, and someone decided to send us into an area that was not controlled by us. It was actually a Marine controlled sector, so we had no real intel on that area. I was sent out on a different patrol, and actually I was on a Overwatch mission. And my guys got sent out,
yeah,
which I had already voiced. I didn't think it was a good idea, but I'm a specialist at the time. What am I going to do? Specialist promotable, but still a specialist. Well, they got sent out, and the truck that I was supposed to be driving ran over an anti-tank mine. And so the Humvee, you can kind of imagine a mine designed to take out a tank, what it would actually do to a Humvee. And so when we got called out to go respond to it, like, and you've been on patrol, you know how we space out our convoys. And I'm looking for my truck and I don't see anything. I see everybody else's truck, but I don't see anything. And then of course coming up on the scene, it was tough. And I'm gonna be honest with you, at that moment was when I said, I can't do this. I can't make decisions that could cost people's lives. Even though that wasn't my decision, I still was going to have to be one of the ones that had to go back and face the families of my guys that just didn't make it.
Yeah.
And I didn't believe I had it in me. I'll be honest, I didn't believe I had it in me. Like I said, I mentioned earlier my father being a Marine, but one thing I forgot to mention is my father was, after he got out, He became a pastor. And so he's been a pastor longer than I've known. Since I was four, I believe. And now I'm 47. And so I just didn't think I had it in me. It was just, and I really just wanted to walk away. I wanted to walk away. At that point in time, I was done. I didn't want to do anything else. You know, once I got back to the States, I just wanted to go see my daughter, check on her, see how she was doing, and then just kind of fade off, you know, just kind of fade away. And it wasn't until I got a call from, it was our medic, actually. He called me and asked me to come up to the medic station. And so I went up there and we talked, and he was like, I just want to check, see how you're doing. I said, look, if this is going to be like some intervention or something like that, bro, like, you can save your breath. You know, I'm like, you medic, I'm infantry. You know what I'm saying? We do the same thing, but you know what I'm saying? You, and I told him, I was like, I have much respect for you, because you got to deal with, you know, things on a different level, because you're having to try to get us back. And then, so I always protected him as well. I said, but I told him, like, hey, just kind of safe. He's like, dude, it's not your fault. You know, I was like, I know that it wasn't my fault. I wouldn't make it. He's like, dude, it's not your fault. I was like, I know that. And he's like, dude, it's not your fault. And when he said it that last time, I just broke down. And I was like, man, I just don't know if I can do this. And he's like, you can. He's like, and you will. He said, because that's how you're built. He's like, how many times did you say the same thing when you were playing basketball? How many times did you say when the team's down and things are going not going the way, you just didn't think you can do it? How many times did you bring the team back? How many times did you, you know, it may not have been scoring. It may not have been, you know what I'm saying, you know, you making the pack. Maybe it was just you playing defense. Maybe it was just you saying, hey, guys, we can do this. He's like, you are built for this. He said, you may not like it. He said, but he said, dude, I've only known you. And he was, at that time, I was, like I said, I was 27 at that time. I just turned 27. I'd only been in for a year. You know what I'm saying? I was only out of basic training for 6 months before we got deployed. And so I'd only been in for a year. And he's like, dude, these guys look up to you. It's like, you have led these guys, you know, all this time to the point where you're a specialist promotable and you are in a squad leader / platoon sergeant leadership role. And you're going to tell me you're going to quit. Because I didn't say anything to anybody, but because I wasn't talking. And those guys know, I like to joke. I was a jokester. I still am, not was. I'm a jokester. You know, I like to keep spirits high. But when things wear me down, it's like, who's keeping me? Who's keeping me? Keeping my spirits high. And it weighed on me a lot. And that was probably my lowest point. One of my lowest points. My other lowest point came a little bit later in my career. But that was, to me, where I said I didn't want to do it anymore. I couldn't, because I didn't want to lose anybody else. And I almost did walk away. But if it wasn't for our medic, if it wasn't for him talking to me and then me walking out there and then looking at my guys and looking at everybody else, and I said, you know what? If I don't do it, who is? Who's going to do it? You know, who's better to get these guys, rally them back up and get back out there to go do it? You know, because there wasn't anybody else as far as that leadership that they were actually looking to. And I, as much as I hated to admit it, I couldn't deny it. Yeah. So, yeah.
Man, thanks for sharing that, bro. I mean, that's, it takes, I know it can be tough, man. Just, really talk about those things, you know, just being vulnerable. But I mean, that's how we're going to bring our impact. You know what I mean? That's how we're going to encourage other veterans, you know, people who may struggle with PTSD, depression, anxiety, a host of other things, to just come out and speak their truth. Right. And my hopes is by doing that and, you know, just opening up our ears and being willing to listen. My hope is that we can prevent a lot of the suicides that are going on. I mean, the suicides are like at all time high, man. And it just every time I see it, man, I've had some people who I serve with, you know, actually commit suicide, man. And it's it's tough, bro. It's just as tough as when you lose them overseas. 100%. Mm-hmm. Man.
I was almost one of those numbers. That was my other low point.
Yeah, bro.
I was almost one of those numbers. Man. So, yeah.
Well, I'm glad you saw the light, bro. I'm glad, man. I'm definitely honored to.
The light was my other two kids I ended up having. My light was my other two kids I had. My son and my youngest daughter. That was my light. At that point in time, I was like, you know what? I don't care about if it's, you know, I don't care if it's women problems. I don't care if it's my PTSD, depression, anxiety, being diagnosed with bipolar later. Nothing else matters. You know, thinking about my oldest daughter, who's now 22. Graduated from college. My son, 14, just turned 14. My youngest daughter just turned 12. Nothing else matters. I will fight and push through anything for those yeah. three. And then now my granddaughter, who just turned 2. That's like a little mini me right there, which scares me. Should scare the rest of the world, actually. But, when I say I literally don't care about anything else, like I don't care about anything else going on with me. None of that is even remotely more important than those four individuals. Because I would fight to my last breath to protect them. And I'm going to do the exact same. I can't do that if I'm, you know, so focused on what's going on with me. That's why I go to counseling. I use the VA. I go to behavioral health. I take advantage of everything that I can get my hands on so I can become the best version of myself for them and just keep passing those teachings on to them. Those two, like I said, those four right there, they're every bit of whenever I feel like I don't have enough strength, I can look at them. They don't have to say nothing to me. I just look at them. Except for my 2-year-old granddaughter. That child, I'm telling you right now, I've never wanted to put anybody in a UFC ring before. That child right there. But I'm scared for myself because she'd probably be able to take me now. I don't know.
Only time will tell, my friend. Only time will tell. Yeah, I definitely agree with what you're saying. And veterans, if you're listening to this, it takes strength. It's not a weakness to go to the VA. It actually shows a great amount of strength, right? I use the VA also. You know, you should use it. The resources are there. The resources are there. You know, there's a veteran crisis line if you need it. 988. Come on, that's there. That's 24/7 veterans. If you at your low point and you're unsure of anything, man, give those folks a call. They're going to pick up 24/7, and they're going to get you in front of who you need to speak to get you right. You get what I'm saying? So my next question for you, brother, is, I mean, obviously, we're no longer in the military, but how would you say, or how would you define, your purpose today outside of the uniform?
100%, just like I mentioned with my three children, and my granddaughter, definitely huge part. What I also have found a lot of purpose in is, like I said, with the minor league basketball team that I own and coach, teaching those young men, dealing with them, helping them, because a lot of them, they deal with a lot of issues as well. And so I always try to make sure to talk to them on and off the court, whether it's about basketball, whether it's about, you know, life, you know, things going on in their life in general. Try to make myself available. The podcast that I do a sports podcast, which is called Birdman Sports 247. And then I also have the Birdman Show, which is, it's a mix. It's kind of like a true crime. We deal with like, you know, emotional stuff, PTSD, depression, families, relationships, stuff like that. Pretty much anything's on the table. I mean, there's nothing that's off the table with that podcast, but my purpose comes from trying to tell people, you know, whether it's not usually my full story, but at least parts of my story that, listen, no matter what's going on in your life, there's always a reason to keep fighting. You know, whether you're finding your strength through spiritual leadership, you know, going to church, you know, whether it's, you know, finding your, your strength with your children, your family, the community that you're involved in, there's always a reason to keep fighting. Yeah. And I can tell people when I was at my lowest points, you know, when I said that I just was going to give up on the military, and then when I got to my second lowest point, when I said I wanted to give up on myself, I just didn't think I had anything left in me to give anyone. And I talked to the crisis hotline, and I was so very, very blessed. I thank God for that. The person I talked to, you know, he and I had a great conversation. And he was just like, look, just do me a favor. Just give me a chance, man. Just go to this therapist. Talk to him. Just give me 1 month. He said, can you just hold off 1 month? And after that month, he said, okay, give me 1 day. Now hold off for just one more day. And it just kept building. It kept building. And I kept saying, you know what? I went through all this stuff in the military. All this stuff. Went through all this stuff. Went through, you know, losing soldiers. Went through, you know, relationships, you know, everything's going on. I went through all this stuff and I'm still here. You know, I survived all of that.
Facts.
What else in life can be thrown at me that's I'm not going to be able to survive? If I was able to fight through and survive through all of that, why am I going to give up because I lost my job? Or why am I going to give up because this relationship didn't work out? You know, like, yeah, it hurts. I'm not going to say it's not going to hurt. Everything hurts. I mean, especially if you're a passionate person and you really, truly love, it's going to hurt. But I'm not going to give up. So, I mean, like I said, I try to find purpose in a lot of different things. Like I said, it starts with my children. It starts with my family. And then, of course, you know, what I'm doing with these young men, coaching them, trying to help them realize their dream and get them overseas, for like overseas contracts and things. So that's where I find a lot of my purpose.
Man, I love that, man. Thanks for sharing that. you know, I definitely love how you have transitioned, and the transition is not always easy, right? But I love how what you said, man, it's always something to fight for, 100%, man. And sometimes the battles get dark, and a lot of times the fiercest battles are the ones that's inside of your mind when it's just you versus you. You get what I'm saying? Yeah, you know what I'm saying, bro.
Hey, that 1v1 is real. That 1v1 is real.
It's real in the field, bro. It's real in the field. 100%. But I do have one more question for you. And I like to ask this question because it causes people to be introspective, but then I just think it's a fun question.
Okay.
What might people be surprised to know about you?
I would say the biggest thing that most people don't really know about me is that I'm a I guess you can say entry level chef. Oh. I love cooking. I love cooking, especially getting on, grill time. And listen, I don't care what the weather is. I don't care. It could be 13 inches of snow on the ground. I'm grilling.
Oh, I love
it. So I love that. And most people don't really, they see me, you know, and especially, oh God, if they come to one of the games, oh God, I yell a lot. I do apologize for anybody who watches any of our games on YouTube. You'll hear me over everybody. That's part of the military thing. It's just, I got yelled at. And so I yell at people, but no, just playing. But, no, actually I'm not playing about the yelling part, but no, I love cooking. I love it. I'm starting to get more into baking, and stuff like that. I actually love a lot of that stuff. So yeah, that's probably the one of the biggest things is probably if somebody sees or whatever, they're like, wait a minute, you made this? Yeah, I did.
Chef Simpson with the pot. Let's go. Cool, man. Well, listen, man. You know, we're coming up on time, but you know, before I let you go, I have something for you. Obviously you know, we're doing this virtually, so I'll have to get my team to send this out to you. But what I have for you is a custom Call to Serve podcast challenge coin. Okay. I had these minted. And then on the back, it has our slogan. Really, our mission is serving those who serve others. You know what I mean? So we'll get that sent out to you. And what I want this to be for you is it's just a reminder, man, of why you served and why you continue to serve. Because the reality is that you got a call one day and you picked up and you answered it and you did what you had to do. I'm so honored to have met you and to just have had this short conversation with you, man. And I hope to establish a brotherhood, man. And we can have many more conversations because you definitely are a kindred spirit. And there's not a lot of people like you in the world. So I have really enjoyed speaking with you. And I got one more thing for you. I got a sticker. You can put whatever you want. Your laptop.
Oh, yeah.
You got a, oh, yeah. Some type of water container. You do whatever you want to do. Let that be a reminder also.
Oh, I love it. You know I appreciate what I mean? That. No, that's awesome, man. That means a lot, man. I appreciate it. I might have to have you on. I got to have you on my podcast.
Let's go.
We definitely got to set something though. We definitely got to get something going.
Yeah, I have my assistant reach out to you and we can get it definitely. Set up. 100%. Heck yeah,
man. I love it.
Well, yeah. Brother, you know, we might have to get you back on another episode and so you can update us on what's going on in your life. Because
just give me a call, you know, call to serve, man. I'm here to serve, man.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Well, my brother, thank you so much. And until next time.
I appreciate you, man. Thank you, y'all. I love all y'all. Have a blessed one.
For sure, bro.